Hey everyone, welcome to another edition of the Front Church Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. Now I'm going to keep this open of the podcast short because we got a busy show for you this week. Neff and I talk about the All-Star race in which Kyle Larson came from the Open, raced his way in by winning the third stage of the Open, and then winning the All-Star race, which is big for that 42 team. And then we got Connor Daly stopping by, previewing the Indy 500. He starts from the fourth row in 11th position at his hometown track. And then me and Neff give our takes on the Indy 500 and really the biggest weekend in motorsports with the Coke 600 in Monaco as well. So let's talk the All-Star race with Neff. All right, Neff. Saturday night's All-Star race. Man, I got to say that was one for the ages. Usually I'm not looking forward to the All-Star race because it's usually just a boring snooze fest once the car gets out front. Last year's was a bit different with the new rules package. This year even more so with the things that look like nostrils on the hood. That bring air up through the vents into the engine. Now, that was a good race.
That was a great race. It really was. I hope they keep tweaking on this package and make it even better, because even though it was a great race, you still really didn't have any passes for the lead outside of Kyle Busch. Mm-hmm. Busch was really the only guy that ran a leader down and passed him. So I would still like to see some tweaking, but all in all, it was ridiculously good, and, you know, to jump on the bandwagon with the Fox booth four wide all the way down a front stretch was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. I never would have believed they could go all the way down through there and not wreck four wide, but they pulled it off. I thought it was great. I thought there was a lot of drama. You had comers, you had goers, and then you had the lunacy at the end of it. It had everything you want in a race. And the only question I had out of it, and I've not been able to find anything, was there any reward for winning a stage? I don't know if there was prize money. I don't know if you got a hearty handshake and a pat on the back. I don't know what you got out of winning a stage in the All-Star race.
Yeah, nothing that I'm aware of. The All-Star race was great, right?
Absolutely.
But the Open was incredible. in the first stage, you had Bubba Wallace, William Byron. There's a late caution. William Byron restarts seventh with two laps to go, gets all the way to the lead because Byron chases Kyle Larson up the track in turn four. Byron gets by for the win. A photo finish with Bubba. And then it was almost, same verse, different song. In the second stage with Bubba and Suarez, with Suarez spinning across the grass, Bubba getting in. We talked about Bubba a lot last week on the podcast. He needed that. Richard Petty Motorsports needed something to go their way. And they got in the All-Star race and then ran really well in the All-Star race. Neff, that Open, I mean, it's usually more entertaining, in my opinion, than the All-Star race, because people are fighting to get in. And there's a lot on the line, obviously, for your chance at $1 million. I don't know. That was incredible. Some really, really good racing.
Absolutely. The Open is always one of my favorite races of the year, because I'm with you. If you don't advance out of the Open, you get like pocket change. I mean, I know they give them something, but I don't even think it covers a tire bill for one set of tires. But you get that, the prestige of making it to the All-Star race, and it just seems like, I mean, we've seen it back to, I'm trying to remember who it was with Joe Nemechek that wrecked in the Open, and they were like headbutting. Was it Harvick?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember that. Yeah, I thought I was thinking it was, but I mean, there's so much intensity in that race, and you always seem to end up getting at one of those three stages, one of those photo finishes, and we got two of them this time. So I was surprised, too, that Bubba was able to be that much in contention after door slamming so hard with Byron coming to the win in the first stage. I really thought the damage to his car was going to screw up his aero enough that he wasn't going to be competitive, but he got right back into it. There was strategy involved in the first two stages that I really enjoyed. It was, the Open kicked things off right, and the All-Star race ran with it.
Yeah, and I mean, Charlotte's not freshly repaved, but in the last 10 years it's repaved. And tires, it seems like they finally mattered somewhere. We've gone to Atlanta this year, and they mattered. Fontana, there too. But you had William Byron, like I said, in the first stage of the Open, go from seventh to first. And he wouldn't have got to first hadn't Bubba drifted up the track in front of Larson and then Byron getting by them both. And then in the second stage of the Open, You had Suarez restarting fourth. Bubba, for the second straight stage, stayed out because of a late stage caution. And Suarez wasn't able to get by. Bubba did run him pretty much into the artificial turf, but hey, you got to do what you got to do to advance. And like you said, good job for Bubba. But Neff, tires actually mattered, and that's something that we should look forward to going into this weekend for the 600, because at a lot of these tracks this year, like Martinsville, right? People said, or was it Bristol, where you said you could run like 400 laps on a, you know, one side of tires. That's incredible.
Yeah, tires mattered a little, and I was kind of glad to see that. It's funny. Charlotte was kind of like the last repave that they did where they focused on longevity of the asphalt. And unfortunately, that has hung over their heads for like a decade. They used a unique polymer in there that allowed the asphalt to age really well. So it has stayed really fresh for a long time. And the end result of that is tires haven't mattered for, like I said, probably 10 years. And it finally seems like it's starting to wear a little bit. Some of that, too, may have just been all of the work they did on the track, because they had the tire dragging out there for a week, rubbing around that top line. They put all that PJ1, VHT, whatever the heck it's called, on the track. And we've heard them from Bristol that with that compound on the track, it actually pulls some of the rubber off of the tire. So you actually get tire wear even if the asphalt or the surface isn't wearing the tires. So that may have been a piece of it too, but I'm with you. I hope that the tire fall off is actually a thing in the 600. I hate races where guys can take two tires or no tires.
Agreed.
And be, you know, within, you know, 0.2 of a second for 100 laps. I'd love to see fall off like we get in Atlanta, where they drop 2 seconds when they're halfway through a run. Because I think that brings out driver skill and it makes a big difference. So I'm with you. I thought the tires did make a little bit of a difference. I like the fact that there were multiple racing grooves and the bottom wasn't predominant. The top wasn't predominant. It seemed like they got a really good mix with the compound basically 3/4 of the way down the track and just leaving the bottom open. The whole thing was, the whole night was good.
Yeah, totally agree. And then obviously the winner of the third stage in the open was Kyle Larson. And Neff, Kyle Larson went on to win the Ulster race. I think he needed this. He was coming off of 2 straight top 10s, but had a stretch of races there earlier in the year where he was just anything and everything that could go wrong went wrong for the 42 team. He has a 16.4 average finish so far this year, Neff. This could be what that team needs, obviously, to propel them to the next level, because they want it, you know, straight up. They had a lot of speed in their car. They went from the back to the front early on, obviously starting the back via the transfer. And when I think of tire fall off, I think of someone like a Kyle Larson or in the Xfinity Series, a Christopher Bell, because of the dirt. What do you think of this? Because Larson, I mean, obviously he needed this, and he hasn't. This is his first win in the Cup level. On a mile and a half track. Granted, it's an exhibition race, but he won $1 million, so that's a good consolation prize.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he won straight up. That push that Harvick gave him was a really big help getting him to the front. But
Harvick couldn't get by.
I will say one thing. That lady in Dover with the crystal shop needs to expand, because she's going to have a lot of business. Ever since Gordon took Larson in there and they got that whole bag of trinkets to shake off the bad luck, he has really rebounded, been running well the last three times. So her business ought to be picking up. But it was one of the things, we've talked about it on the podcast, that the racing is cyclical, and you have downtimes and you have uptimes, and they're on an upswing right now. And it's one of those deals where we go to Michigan here in a couple weeks, and I won't be surprised to see him win there because he's so good there. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him win this weekend. I mean, it's just one of those things that it comes and it goes. It seems like Chevy has got their arms finally around this package, and they're contending, although I understand that it was a different package than the All-Star race. But just Chevy teams in general seem to really be getting up and getting in the mix and contending. So I think that he's kind of shaking off the bad luck, and he's on that uptick, and He'll get a win, and he'll be in contention when we get to the playoffs. Will he run it all the way to Homestead? We'll have to wait and see.
I believe that's the first win for Chevrolet outside of outside of Chase Elliott and outside of a Super Speedway since Larson did back in September of 2017 at Richmond. That's good that they have the mile and a half speed. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's a factor either this weekend. I think in his career he has 5 or 6 second place finishes at mile and a half tracks. He should have won probably 3 or 4 of them already at the mile and a half, but just hasn't. It just seems like he's been snake bitten by so many things throughout his whole career, let alone this year, which obviously he has. But now for the second straight week, I felt like Kevin Harvick had the best car. And it was cool to see that millennial Busch AF car out front, the pink car. But this time it was the pit crew that let it get away, and Harvick held no prisoners post-race, kind of blasting his pit crew, saying you can't give him up that way. But we've seen this before with Harvick and the 4 team. But that's 2 straight races now that they've given away, in my opinion.
Yeah, we've seen this dance before. and unfortunately for them, they had a hang up on the left rear on the crucial stop that stuck him to the back. He had to fight his way back forward and then ended up being behind Larson at the key time there. I don't know. I thought Busch was right there with him. True. I thought the 4 and the 18 were the class of the field. And if everything else had been equal, I think it would have been those two battling it out. But that, again, shows you how hard it is to win these races. Everything has to go right. And the slightest little hiccup can screw you up, whether it's somebody driving down over the right front of your car or somebody spinning in front of you or whatever it is, it ends up causing you a little bit of damage and crazy things happen. And speaking of a little bit of damage, I don't know if you saw it or not, did you see they released the information about Larson's flip at Talladega?
I did.
And said that the damage to his wheel well from the contact that sent him into the spin changed his liftoff speed from 250 to 180. And I thought that was pretty amazing that small of amount of damage could result in that car taking off. I'm glad to hear they're not going to be throwing any more anti-liftoff stuff at the cars and that they think they know what caused it, and hopefully that won't happen again. But, you never know in these races. Anything can happen to you and ruin your day. I felt bad for Bubba because he made the comment post-race that, he got up there to run with the big dogs and stepped on the gas and had it on the floor and they just pulled away from him. And it was just a matter of, RPM doesn't have the ponies under the hood that those other teams do. So when it came down to pure horsepower, which, let's face it, that whole race, they were pretty much wide open. He was a second-class citizen, and getting a top-5 run out of that's pretty impressive.
For sure. And you mentioned Kyle Busch, and, even in the first stage when the 4, the 18, and even Truex, they kind of checked out from the field. They're like 5-6 seconds ahead in 30 laps. That was good racing for the lead, and Kyle obviously evidently got by. But that, I guess that just shows how good this – I don't want to say package is because – it was 100-lap or 88-lap sprint. But it was a really good race. Even for the lead when, you have cars checked out, there wasn't really one that ever got away. Harvick in the second stage, I guess you could argue, did. But then there was a caution so to bunch things up towards the end. So, I don't know, big win for Larson. Sucks for Harvick. It's 2 in a row that he slipped away. But I think it's good for Stuart Haas because you had Bowyer win the pole. Granted, you had to make a 4-tire pit stop and haul ass down pit road, in order to do that. But they've got some speed. Even on the 1-lap speed in qualifying, Harvick and Bowyer were class of the field by far. Stuart Haas, they've turned the corner here. They haven't won yet, obviously, this year. But now, if you hit on Bubba Wallace, and I know we talked a little bit about him at the top of this podcast, we're going to talk about Bowyer coming up, but I want to overemphasize this Bubba Wallace story because so emotional after he won the second stage of the Open. Bubba Wallace comes over, gives him a big hug. It was just emotional, and it was really cool to see Bubba wears his heart on his shoulder. That was awesome, Neff. We talked about Bubba a lot last week and mental health as a whole, but to see him come back the next week and get a top five run. Granted, it's the All-Star race, but this is big for that team.
Absolutely. And the thing that I loved was the stands. Mm-hmm. When he won that second stage, the stands went ballistic. Mm-hmm. And it just shows you what he brings to the sport. And we talked about it last week, the frustration that I feel, and I know a lot of people feel, that he hasn't been able to garner sponsorship from major corporations. And it doesn't make any sense. The guy is a complete package, and I'm hoping that somebody in a boardroom somewhere gets to at least see a replay of what went on Saturday night and hear that crowd and listen to everything that circled around that event and realize how important he is to the sport, how important a 43 is to the sport, and just how much benefit a major corporation could get out of getting on board with a young star. And I think he'd be a great fit for just about anyone. The other thing I felt, I don't know, torn about all week was we heard the whole rumor flying around about Andretti coming over and bringing Honda into NASCAR, partnering up with RPM, and or merging with them or whatever they're going to do, if they do it. My only hope out of that is that they keep Bubba on and give him the chance to be the face of that. Because getting Honda behind him would be a pretty big deal, and I think that would help propel his career a good bit. But if that happens or doesn't happen, we will find out. But this Saturday night was a huge deal for that organization, a huge deal for Bubba, a huge deal for the sport, and I just hope that the sales and marketing folks at RPM are knocking on a whole lot of doors and ringing a whole lot of phones today and the rest of this week.
Yeah. As far as that rumor, I'm not sure. I don't think that has happened. I know Richard Petty Motorsports officials shut it down, but they would, even if it was going to happen, obviously. So, right. Regardless, yeah, like you said, if a new manufacturer comes in the sport and they have him as the face of it, good for them. But I would call it unlikely as of right now, but who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. Now, we're going to get a rant out of you right now. I know it. I did over text, so I definitely know I'm going to over the podcast. Interesting. I don't even know what happened because Fox didn't really capture everything. They didn't capture the whole footage of Clint Bowyer, Ryan Newman, right? We're 20 minutes on the podcast almost now, and we haven't even mentioned it. This was, I'll call it interesting. I know you had some vulgar language about it via text, but apparently they made contact on the front stretch or something sometime during the race. Bowyer thought Newman was a lap down. Post-race, Newman comes up to him, gives him a shove. Bowyer body slams him, whatever. Newman spins him out head-on into the wall, which isn't good because it's on the cool-down lap. Tears up a race car. And plus, I mean, we've seen this before at Charlotte with Kenseth and Keselowski. When Keselowski banged into Kenseth, Kenseth was taking his belts off and unstrapping. I mean, Bowyer could have been doing the same, so that's dangerous. It doesn't matter how fast you're going. But this after the race, you see Clint Bowyer like a bat out of hell run up to Newman and to his car while Newman's still in it, punches him in the face, I think, 11 times.
Now, yeah, 10 or 11.
That's crazy. I don't know, but I put on Twitter that, you know, Bowyer running up to the car, he broke down perfectly, spot on, as my football coach would say in high school. But
yeah, he did break it down well. I'll give him that.
Yeah, I don't know how...
Drop the hips a little bit, I'll give you that.
Yeah, but as far as the actual action, he got some shots in. You could tell post-race with Newman's left eye, but I don't know. I don't want to say too much because I want to hear you go on a rant right now.
All right, so first of all, I thought Newman was at least a lap down too because he ran like a bag of hammers all day long. And I was watching the race and all of a sudden with like five laps to go, he's in sixth. And I'm like, how in a wide world of sports did he get up to there? So the same thing with Bowyer. Bowyer thought he was lap down. That doesn't give Bowyer a right to chop across his nose, especially after Bowyer just went off on Eric Jones last week about it. So, I mean, you got to be the pot calling the kettle black there if you're doing dirty blocks, which it sounds like happened. I'm not on board with everybody that believes Newman spun him. Because if you watch Newman's tires, they stay on the white line all the way through the corner, and Bowyer comes down on him. Newman never turns to the right. Boyer drops onto his nose and spun himself out. So he can say Newman spun him all day long, but you watch the front tires on Newman's car, they never budged. If Boyer's unbuckling while still on the racetrack, then that's on him. I mean, if you're still on a hot racetrack, you need to stay buckled. I don't think he was. If he's trying to use that as an excuse, that's weak. But my beef, and we've gone over this before in the podcast, if drivers have a beef, settle it on pit road between the drivers, nobody else involved. That said, the driver needs to be out of his car. You cannot come up and just start rabbit punching some dude while he's in his vehicle. Whether he was strapped in, partially strapped in, whatever, his helmet was off, and your helmet is on. And that's even worse than punching the guy in a car. The fact that you came over with your helmet on and start assaulting an individual who isn't wearing a helmet, then walk away or are dragged away by the officials and still have your helmet on when the guy comes back to confront you. Be a man, take your helmet off, and bow up. And if you want to throw hands, that's great. If you want to be a man and challenge somebody, go for it. And in all honesty, everything I read on the worldwide intraweb is, you don't want to mess with Newman. He's a badass. He'd mess you up. Has anybody ever seen Ryan Newman fight? Never. I've never seen this guy do anything remotely close to roughing somebody up. So he may not be able to fight at all. I think a lot of people make an assumption just because he's very stockily built. But I don't know if he can throw down or not. But the bottom line is, you don't throw on a guy in a car. Michael Waltrip did it way back in the day. Yeah. And it just said, same thing earlier this year. McDowell still had his helmet on. He was fighting with Suarez. If you're going to fight with somebody, take your helmet off, be a man, and let's settle it out till somebody hits the ground. And still, I'll make an exception in this one with Newman being in his car, that the crew members got in and protected him because he was being assaulted. It's different if he's out of the car. Once they're out of the car, let the driver settle it, keep the damn crew members away, and let them go after it. But in my book, I thought Boyer was wrong assaulting him in a car, leaving his helmet on, and then keeping it on even after Newman came over to talk to him.
Yes, so we're on the same page here. In my opinion, I'll just be very blunt about it. It was a chicken shit move by Boyer. I shouldn't say we're all for fighting, but we like the emotion, the raw emotion, and that's what NASCAR gives us, you know, over a lot of other sports, especially.
Look at it this way. We haven't had an Ian show NASCAR highlights in 2.5-3 years, other than the Daytona 500 Homestead. They showed highlights, quote, this weekend. Yep. The only thing they showed was a fight.
Yeah, that's true. And I was at a bar and I actually saw it after the race. So I was like, hey, tell all my friends, look, and you know, that happened tonight. But yeah, I don't know. In my opinion, you're right. Boyer should have waited until Newman got out of the car and then just square up with the guy. Like, it's just a cowardish move to assault a guy, you know, 11 times in the face when he's in the car. Wait for him to get out of the car and then throw down. And then Boyer, you know, everyone, like you said, is kind of afraid of Newman or says that, you know, I wouldn't want to fight this guy. Well, Boyer did. Now let him get out of the car. And then we'll see if, you know, if Ryan Newman's got, like you said, if he can fight or if he can't. But then what really blew my mind is, yes, NASCAR officials, you know, got in the middle of him. Boyer still had his helmet on. But then Newman got up in his face and didn't do anything about it. Like, if I got punched in the face 11 times, I don't care who it's by, I'm going after your ass, you know? Like,
oh, yeah. If it had been me, when he got over to him, I'd have grabbed him and pounded his head against his car. If he had his helmet on, I'd have just beat his head on the car with his helmet on. Go, you want to leave it on? Fine. Take this.
Yeah, exactly. So that also blew my mind. Like, those officials, yes, they can separate you, but you're the one that just got beat up. Go after the guy if you want to. Apparently Newman didn't. Maybe it wouldn't look good for the sponsors, and I know they, you know, that Acorn sponsor is a new sponsor for that team. So maybe, I don't know. It's very corporate, obviously, and that's probably a big reason why I don't see a ton of fights in NASCAR now. But I don't know. It was cool to see the emotion from both drivers. 2 weeks in a row from Boyer, although 2 weeks in a row I would say he was on the wrong side of it.
Yeah, I would agree.
But hey, if this is going to continue, I mean, good for NASCAR. This is what we need.
If it's going to continue, shameless plug to our good friends at Bass Pro Shop. Head over to Concord Mills Thursday night from 5 to 6. because there's an autograph session at Bass Pro Shop at Concord Mills, and your two guest drivers are Clint Bowyer and Ryan Newman.
Yeah. I mean, set up a wrestling ring and let's go. Honestly, though, that can't be, like, as awkward as, say, like, a Daniel Suarez, Michael McDowell earlier this year when 2 days later they had to get in the truck with each other and ride around the track. So it's probably better to do it at an autograph signing, you know, two drivers talk. And the best part about this, though, is that these drivers have, you know, they're not rookies. They've been around for 12 and 18, 19 years in the Cup Series. So, I did hear Brett Griffin on the Door Bumper Clear podcast with Dirty Mo Radio last week say that there's two times that Bowyer's ever wanted to really fight a guy. And one of them was last, you know, Jeff Gordon, obviously, in, I think, 2012 at Phoenix. And then the other was Ryan Newman last year. So he got his shots in this weekend. And, I don't know. The best line out of the whole thing, I think, was Darrell Waltrip saying, "Look at Bowyer, he's like a machine." You know, we give DW a lot of crap, but his one-liners this year have been on point.
Yeah, I mean, he said some goofy stuff, but at the same time, he's caught some pretty funny ones right in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, so, I don't know, I mean, is this good for NASCAR, or is it a bad look?
No, like, absolutely it's good. I mean, let's take a deep breath. It's good for NASCAR from a fan interest and exposure standpoint. Might not be the 100% best thing from a corporate sponsorship angle, but the bottom line is corporate sponsorship is driven by eyeballs. And if your ratings start skyrocketing because of fights, because of stupid actions by your drivers, whatever, those increased ratings increase your revenue, which increases sponsor exposure and ultimately brings them in. So you can, you know, you can talk all you want about you don't want that image for your sport, but at the same time, if it's bringing in eyeballs, which ultimately means sponsorship dollars, then it's absolutely good. And I promise you, like I said, first time we have seen non-Daytona Homestead highlights on ESPN in probably 3 years. And the only thing they showed was a fight. They did not even show Larson taking the checkered or doing the donuts or put up a final five, top five or anything. All they showed was the fight.
Yeah, I think that shows, and I've noticed that too, obviously, with ESPN. Like, there was, I can't remember the race last year, but it was a big race, and they didn't show anything. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, come on. But yeah, that's the way it's gone since ESPN stopped covering the sport in 2014, I think that was their last year. And it just kind of decreased ever since then, obviously, but that's a different story. But I think this is good for NASCAR too. Like you said, it attracts more eyes, attracts more viewership, probably. A ton of people have seen this fight. If you look at social media, the engagement with it's awesome. It's getting a ton of shares on Facebook, a lot of comments on Twitter, a lot of retweets, a lot of the drivers talking about it. So I think it's a good thing too. I don't know. I wish Newman would have done something because Bowyer. And I've never I've never disliked Bowyer at all, and I still don't, obviously, but I don't know, it was a cowardish move, and if I was Newman, I would have kicked Boyer's ass. Like, you could have stopped me.
No doubt, and I look at it like Bowyer got away with it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, he went up there and just cheap shotted a guy, rapid fire, and walked away with a slap on the wrist. I mean, there's no fines from NASCAR, according to what they've said.
I think that's a good thing.
I agree. I mean, if it becomes a pattern, they might need to. But even then, I think NASCAR realizes that it drew attention to the sport. So I don't think they've got any concerns or need to be fining somebody. And even if they fine him, I hope they don't do it publicly. I hope it's one of those behind-the-scenes fine things that we don't know about. But even then, we talked about it, they both went in the trailer at different times, but they passed each other in the hallway. How does Newman not just cold cock him when he's in the trailer?
Yeah.
I'm dumbfounded that there was zero retaliation over this thing. Now, who knows? We get to Martinsville, or we get to Bristol, or we get to Phoenix. He may totally wreck him, and you know, just tell everybody that that was a payback. But I wouldn't let it linger. I'd have jacked him up right then and there.
That, and we also know that Newman races, you know, people very hard. He doesn't like being passed. Everyone says that he's the hardest driver to pass in all the sport. Boyer's going to have a hell of a time next time they're around each other. So, it'll be something to watch, too. And like you said, maybe we do get to a short track like a Martinsville or like a, maybe even like a New Hampshire where speeds aren't as high. And he just plows them. He turns them, wrecks them, whatever. Or maybe when he's having a good run, he races them hard when Newman's going a lap down or whatever. So, that'll be something to watch going forward. Neff, any final thoughts on the All-Star race before we talk a little bit about trucks? Because I thought it was a decent truck race outside of the Kyle Busch show.
I want to give a shout-out to the fans. I mean, the stands were packed, or way more packed than they've been for a while.
For an All-Star race, yes.
I was glad to see the crowd there. Again, we always have these arguments about should the All-Star race move around, and I'm firmly in the camp of it stays in Charlotte, and it's for that very reason. And Larson talked about it post-race, that there's a whole bunch of guys from his shop that never get to see them race any other time during the year, and they get to come out for the All-Star race. And I just think it works perfectly in that market, and it needs to stay there.
Yeah, I'm indifferent about it. I don't really know what I think. I do like the idea of families getting out to the track. Obviously, that can't ever get to a track because they work at the shop, and they're not part of the road crew, but... Also, I mean, if you look at other sports, for the most part, outside of the NFL, which they've started to travel around a little bit, it's in a different city pretty much every year. Granted, now, NASCAR's All-Star event is way better than any other, you know, professional sport All-Star event. In football, there's no defense played in the Pro Bowl. In basketball, there's no defense played in the NBA All-Star game. Baseball, eh, it's all right. But NASCAR, I mean, it's just better than all the other All-Star games. So, and even at Charlotte, like Charlotte's a mile and a half, yes, it's been there for, what, 30 years or whatever, probably, if not more. Yes, it's a mile and a half, and we've, you know, it's a cookie-cutter track, whatever you want to call it, but it's still better than all the other professional sports All-Star race games. Now, if we go to, like, a Bristol, or I'm just using that as an example, or another short track, who knows, maybe it'll be even better, and we could see some... I mean, we saw a fight this past weekend, so we can't complain too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I don't know. Leave it in Charlotte for all I care. It doesn't really matter to me. But, Neff, you want to talk about some truck series?
Sure.
All right. Outside of Kyle Busch, because he started, what, eighth and got to the lead in the first two laps. he led 102 of 134 laps. But outside of that, Neff, really good racing, I thought. And we had Brennan Poole with On Point Motorsports get their best finish and his best finish in the truck series in second. And that comes a week after they couldn't race. The 30 team couldn't race at Kansas. You know, and we talked about this last week on the podcast and the week before, the truck count was down quite a bit at Kansas. They ended up, you know, getting close to a full field, but they missed it because of a lack of funding. They come back, get a sponsorship, which is a vaping company, which I was kind of surprised that NASCAR passed, and they finished second. I think Poole definitely needed this, because if you look at the way his tenure in the Xfinity Series ended, he just kind of got the boot from Chip Ganassi Racing and DC Solar at the time. And he struggled last year, couldn't find a ride, ran a few ARCA races, and here he is, second in the truck series.
Yep, and I've always been a fan of Brennan.
Very entertaining.
From back in the UARA days. UARA was a traveling late model series in the Southeast, and there's a lot of good drivers that have come through it, and Brennan was one of the shining stars that came through it. And I've always thought he had what it takes to make it at the national level of NASCAR. And like you said, the whole Ganassi DC Solar thing just kind of really fell apart at the end. And I felt like it was just bad all the way around for everybody involved. And I was kind of hoping that Brennan would land on his feet. And you mentioned he really struggled last year trying to find a ride. And he kept his head to the grindstone or nose to the grindstone and kept digging and working at it. And he's got something this weekend, went out, was fastest in final practice and ends up running second. And yeah, he needed it. That team needed it. The sport needed it. I just thought it was good all the way around for him for the weekend. And I hope other, kind of like with Bubba. I hope some other corporations take note and jump on board with these guys and give them a chance to go out and try and win some races this year.
For sure. And, I mean, we see that a lot of drivers, right? Like, a lot of drivers are being cycled out of the sport in the Cup Series for sure. But even at the Xfinity and truck level, like Xfinity, right? Brendan Poole was running Xfinity for 2 full years, got cycled out. Ryan Reed, 5 years. I had an interview with him, and you can check out the article at frontstretch.com from last week, and he talked about what he's doing this year. Obviously, got a race with DGR Crosley at Vegas in March and finished 9th, and you can see what he's doing now. But Poole needed this for sure, and you said the sport needed it and whatnot. The series definitely needed it because they had, you know, outside, it was their home track for sure, but they had 36 trucks show up, which is very good for the truck race. Probably the biggest field they'll see this year, or, you know, entry list outside of Daytona, which I think they had 39 or 40. That's a big deal for the truck series. And, you know, you had guys like Stewart, you had your usuals run up front, Friesen, Crafton, a second straight pole, and I think it's third straight top five or something like that. But then you had like Johnny Sauter struggling all night long, finished 17th. You had Ross Chastain, our podcast guest last week, finished 10th. Extending his streak of top 10s. Unfortunately, he won't make the next three, I think, because of the Truck Series Showdown or whatever it is, where you win $50,000, the winner does. If they win all three, they get $500,000, and you got to run for truck points for that. So, I mean, entertaining race, I thought, outside of Kyle Busch. But Neff, we've talked about this a lot. 5 for 5. He's done now. I guess it's worth mentioning because it's very impressive no matter what racing series you're in. And dating back to last year, he's won 6 in a row in the Truck Series. So, I mean, can anyone... We talk about this all the time whenever we bring it up, him in the Truck Series, but if he were to race a full year, he'd win 18 races.
Yeah, I think he'd win 20 out of 24 if he ran the full season. And again, all these people that complain and say it's the equipment, the other guys driving that equipment are not winning every week. And he gets in it, and he wins every time out. And it's just, for whatever reason, he is the master when it comes to racing in the trucks. And I personally enjoy watching him do it because it boggles my mind that he just does the things he does, getting around people and getting through people. And I always, you know, you never want to wish bad on people, but I always root for them to have pit road issues just so he has to go to the back and drive back through the whole field because it's fun to watch. But I'm with you. I thought the race was really entertaining. Again, it's the trucks. Trucks always put on the best races, I think. I'm glad to see we had a good count. Would hope to see that we can see more of that at some tracks where we have to travel. I do wish the best for these guys running for the big money here over the next few races because, face it, truck teams need all the money they can get. So if somebody managed to pull off $500,000, that'd be pretty awesome. But it was – I love watching the trucks. I wish they ran at Charlotte in the fall. I still – and I know it's hoping against hope, but I still think a truck race at the dirt track at Charlotte in the fall would be phenomenal while the Xfinity guys and the Cup guys are running on the Roval. I think that would just make that weekend complete. But for now, we'll just keep hoping that somebody finally decides to put up that money.
Yeah, that'd be cool for sure. And even, I mean, they could never do this, but say the trucks run on the dirt, Xfinity on the you know, the oval, and then the Roval for the Cup Series in the fall. That they couldn't do that. They just couldn't. It takes too long to set up the Roval. But, you know, Kyle Busch had a good quote after the race saying something along the likes of, "It sucks that you can only race so many races because you're too good at it." It was just awesome. He's so entertaining. I don't know. If I were a new fan coming to this sport, or when new fans come to me and they're like, "Who should I like?" And I'm like, well, I don't play favorites, but Kyle Busch is entertaining as hell. So just,
absolutely.
So he's good for the sport. We've talked about that on the podcast a bunch. Neff, any final thoughts on NASCAR as a whole from this past weekend before we kind of get into the Indy 500? Because we have a big weekend of racing coming up.
I think it was a good weekend. I mean, I just from fan interest, from the car counts, from the interaction that the at all levels, it just seemed like everything went really well. I still hope, knocking on wood, that the folks at NASCAR are paying attention to driver availability. The IndyCar guys having an autograph session where every driver from IndyCar was available and that people could line up and sign autographs. Brad Keselowski went to the Discount Tire in Mooresville on, I think it was Thursday, and was there at like 10 a.m. People were lined up at 8 a.m. around the building to get an autograph from him. There needs to be an hour or 2 hours at the track every weekend where the Cup guys are available to sign autographs in some arena where it is free to the fans. They just have to stand in line and wait. They don't have to buy a pass. They don't have to be in some hospitality plan. They just get there and get in line. If you don't get there early enough, that's on you. But have it be available for an hour or two where these Cup guys are available so that Joe Schmo, common fan who doesn't have any kind of special access, can get to them and get their autographs on a typical race weekend.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you actually brought up a good point, because last week I was fortunate enough to go to Philadelphia for the Xfinity Takeover, right? And that was so much fun. If you've never gone to an event like that, fan, media, whoever, I suggest going to something like that, because it's so cool. You get so much access. It was just incredible that we got a bus tour of the city. You know, you're hanging out with the drivers on a more of a personal level now, instead of being at the track. They're obviously different away from the track than they are at the track. You got to interview with them, of course. You got a ton of access. But the fans in Philadelphia, and Christopher Bell said this too to me, when you think of Philly, you don't think of NASCAR. You just don't. Yeah. You think, you know, they have the Flyers, the Eagles, the 76ers, and the Phillies, and they're all right with each other, with the arenas. So you don't think of NASCAR, but thousands, I'm not kidding when I say this, thousands of fans, or people, I don't know if they're fans, flocked the streets of Philadelphia to see us, and to see NASCAR, and to see the Xfinity Series. So I don't know, that makes me happy, and it makes me proud of the Xfinity, for sure. Obviously, they're based out of Philadelphia, and they're promoting the Dover race in the fall, and also the Pocono race coming up. Philly's like right in the middle of Dover and Pocono, so it's a good location for those two races, obviously. Yeah, Justin Allgaier throwing out the first pitch, hanging out with the fans. You talk about interaction. I think it was the local NBC reporter. She wanted to do a live hit with Allgaier, but her producer wanted him to interact with fans. So she went down to the corner, and she saw a group of like teenagers, and they're on their senior trip, according to them. And she just brought him in, and Allgaier was giving him out tickets and signing for them. It was just really cool. And then on Wednesday, like I said, we had the bus tour. We got to go to the Rocky Steps. It was just so much fun. And it might take an entitlement sponsor, because that wouldn't have happened without Xfinity.
Right.
I don't see Monster doing that. I don't see Monster doing, this is going to sound really blunt, but I don't see Monster doing much of anything. It would take an entitlement sponsor like that, I feel like, at the Cup level, to do something like that, to have an event where you get all these drivers, you get all this access, whether it's fans. There's 17 drivers there. I mean, that's almost half the field. And you had all the top drivers, obviously, and with the top rides. So you can look at more of that this week on frontstretch.com. The day this comes out, the podcast comes out, I'll also have an article out on the Xfinity Takeover. Really cool event, Neff. I don't know. I think it's an A+. Obviously, this is the fourth one, and this is the first one I've been to, but good job to Xfinity and good job to NASCAR for putting it on.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, and I know you're not near old enough to remember this, but if you look back at the history of the sport and the early 70s when RJR came into it, that was kind of their thing. They did a preseason kickoff in Winston-Salem. And they had this huge event, and the drivers were there, and the fans could come, and it just built up momentum for the season. And the media tour, for what it is now, or what it was, what's left of it, if there even is anything anymore, back then, RJR took care of it, and RJR took you around and took you to all these different places, and you got to talk to all the teams. And the media centers, every track on a schedule, if they didn't have a media center RJ Reynolds came in and built it for him. They weren't huge, they weren't elaborate, but they came in and built it for him. RJ Reynolds gave paint to the track promoters and the track owners so that they had consistent Winston red and white paint around the facilities because they wanted that image. And they did a preseason book, and it was just, it was everything was organized through RJ Reynolds and Winston. And then at some point, I don't know, I'd probably say about the time of the explosion in the early 90s when the sport really blew up, NASCAR looked at it and said, hey, we can do this and make money on it. And so they started taking over things and doing this stuff instead of Winston and doing it for profit. And, you know, I give them credit for it because you monetize what you can and you expand your brand and make what you can out of your brand. But that kind of has gone away now, and we're kind of back to where we've come full circle, and we need that again. Whether it's Monster, whether it's the next title sponsor, whoever it is, we need to get, like you said, that kind of a company that gets behind it and really drives it home to the fans and brings it to the fans in order to build this sport back up. And I think, as we were talking earlier, this past weekend I think was really good for the sport, but we need to capitalize on it. And I don't know how much this week we're promoting the sport and promoting it out in front of people when we have such a great amount of momentum coming off of the All-Star race.
Yeah, totally agree. So if anyone, this is for fans, media, whoever, if you ever get the chance to go to an event like the Xfinity event or like an event you said back in the day, do it. It's a ton of fun. You get to see these drivers away from the track where they're more happier and there's no pressure, less stress. So totally recommend it. Neff, I mentioned there's a big weekend of racing. It's probably the biggest weekend of racing of the year. We got we got Monaco, Indy 500, and the Coke 600. I want to talk about Indy now. Now, Neff, you're a Hoosier native. You're from Indiana.
Yes, sir.
You're from Indianapolis. You know, when I've been there once last year, which was really cool. And I had goosebumps as soon as, it's so cliche to say, but I walked up the front stretch in the grandstands, and I just looked to my left, looked to my right, and I just, the hair on my arms and my neck stood up, literally. And it, yep. You know, it's so cliche Absolutely. To say, but I could feel the history. And that was just for the cup race. So if I know our colleague Zach Tanzretti's there covering it this weekend, or all week in Indy. And he says, I got to get to an Indy 500, and I know I do. So, Neff, I'm going to give the floor to you. Kind of keep it abbreviated, because I'm just going to ask you, what does the Indy 500 mean to you?
I mean, it's the reason I'm a race fan. I went to my first Indy 500 in vitro. My mom was pregnant with me and went to the Indy 500. And I mean, I've had it in my blood since I was a kid. I missed four races from when I was born until 1996 when they had the split. And three of those, I wasn't in the country. I mean, it was just a matter of, it was life. My senior year in high school, I went to the track every day that it was open. And I sat in the same spot, and the security guys knew me, and it just, it's the reason I'm a race fan. And you talk about the hair standing on your arms, it still does that for me, you know, 55 years later. And I'll never forget taking Matt Weaver the first time. And we drove through the tunnel off 16th Street, and you come up and you see the museum, and he looked me in the eye and said, I get it. He's like, you talked about this for the longest time, and I can feel it. And you just, it's hallowed ground. And you go in there, and you can literally feel history. And it is just an amazing part of motorsports, and it's the reason... It's the reason for motorsports in America. I mean, if you don't have the Indy 500, I don't know that you end up with all of the other forms of racing that we have, because it all started, they built the place in 1909. The first race was actually a balloon race, but they ran motorcycles and then they ran cars in 1911 for the first one. And it just, it has been in the fabric of the sport forever. Yes, it had some down times in the early IRL days, and even up until the 100th running, I don't think it got back to that pinnacle point of motorsports. But that 100th running and showing up and getting back to 350,000 people being
incredible.
There. And literally, that's the only time that I've ever heard that they actually claimed it was sold out. They would not sell another ticket. I've never, in all my years, had them do that. And it may just be because of the semantics of the infield now and the road course and the fact that they don't have near as much room as they used to. But it was funny when I went, because I was there for the 100th running. There's no way I would have missed it. Listening to the people that worked at the facility talking about, I can't believe all these people and we don't know what to do. And I'm like, this is the way it used to be. You know, for 30-some years that I was alive, you had 300,000 people there. I mean, it was just the way it was. And we kind of had that dip. But I feel like it's back, and I feel like it is once again the premier motorsports event in all of racing. And we had bumping again. It was so beautiful having bumping again.
That was pressure.
And seeing that last moment in qualifying just encompassed everything about Indy. That you've got all your chips on the table and you have pushed them all in and you've got four laps. And the slightest bobble is the difference between making it and not making it. And you had to be perfect. And Junkos was perfect on that last lap and knocked out McLaren. McLaren puts a full effort into one car to make the 500 and fails. That gives you an idea of how special it is and how hard it is to make that race. And I pray they don't do guaranteed spots.
And that one car was Fernando Alonso. I mean, that's no pushover. Granted, yes, he's only ran one IndyCar race at Indy, which was a few years back. But he did well in that race, too, before he blew up. Granted, that was with Andretti Autosport. But, yeah.
I was dumbfounded that McLaren only brought one car.
Yeah. Yeah,
the fact that they made one car and he wrecked that, so they had another car, but it wasn't the same. And so you basically are starting over from scratch after he wrecked that first car.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I felt the pressure watching the qualifying session yesterday. And obviously, you know, I got delayed because of rain, but still, it was incredible. And, you know, you had James Hinchcliffe make it for the second straight year or miss it. You know, he made it this year after missing it last year. And I mean, there's been a lot of crashes in the practice sessions this week that are kind of scary. Cars get airborne. None have actually gone over, to my knowledge, though, so that's good. I know IndyCar worked on something on the floorboard, I believe. There's some kind of holes in the floor or something they were talking about on the broadcast yesterday. So that's good because we've seen some vicious crashes there over the past few years and throughout the history of the track. But I think this will be a good race. Now, if we got Simon Pagenaud on the pole, Ed Carpenter, Spencer Pigot on the front row as well as Pagenaud. I don't want to get your prediction yet, but I mean, over the past few years, we've seen a fuel mileage race. Like you said, the 100th running with Alexander Rossi winning. You had Juan Pablo Montoya come back and win a few years ago. And I think that was the year that there's like 80 something passes for the lead. So we've seen some really good racing there over the past few years. Last year, Will Power got his first Indy 500. What do you think we're going to see this weekend?
I think we'll see a decent race. You know, the aero package has gotten a little bit more back to open wheel versus the one when Juan Pablo won it, where the rear wheels were kind of enclosed and it made for more slipstream passes. And I think that's why you had so many passes that year. So it's a little bit tougher to pass with these cars, but still, I mean, you're running 230 miles an hour in qualifying. Probably run 218 to 222 in the race, which is still flying.
you don't say.
But it's. I think it'll be, you know, it's Indy. It's always a great race. There'll be strategy in play. Which strategy plays out, we don't know. You got to keep in mind that Penske's in it, and he's got 17 Borg Warner trophies for a reason. Andretti always fights the battle that is just the curse of Indy for the Andretti family. I mean, they've had a lot of close calls as a family and only succeeded one time as an organization. They got five wins. So it's there's just it's Indy. I mean, I don't know how else to explain it. There's so many different factors that go into it. And we talked earlier about how perfect you have to run to win a NASCAR race. Indianapolis multiplies that by 10. The slightest problem, you know, a pit gun hangs up, or a jack malfunctions, or, you know, the fuel rig doesn't properly engage for a split second. Any of those little bitty things can ruin your day. And so we will watch it, and there will be the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. And it's what we live to see, and it's what I've grown up on. And every year it's a truly special thing to watch.
Yeah, for sure. I'm really glad I got that experience last year of going to Indy, because that was like on the bucket list of tracks that I wanted to go to next. Now it's the Indy 500, and you know, I'm a NASCAR guy. I always have been, always will be, but I'm a race fan too. And so Indy, I don't know. Like I said, when I went into that track for the first time, just the feelings that I got down my body, yep. It was just crazy.
I completely understand, and I'm telling you, and I will tell anybody I ever talk to that's anything remote to a race fan or not a race fan, once in your life, you have to be on the front stretch at Indianapolis for the start of the 500. There's no greater emotional feeling, I don't think, than seeing those 33 cars coming down that canyon of people, the balloons still drifting away in the distance, and just the anticipatory roar that kind of slowly builds until that green flag flies, and then the roar of the engines, and it just, that whole moment just stirs emotions that you don't even know you have until it happens.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely on my bucket list for, you know, going forward. And I wish it would have been this year. Unfortunately, it won't be. But Neff, we're not going to break down F1 a lot because I don't know much about Formula 1. I don't pay attention to it a lot, unlike, you know, like I do IndyCar, at least. So, I mean, I would imagine Lewis Hamilton's going to be a threat for the win, as he is every race in F1. But you've got some other top contenders there, too. I guess we'll get into our predictions now. Who do you got winning Monaco?
I was going to go with Bottas, but that just seems like an easy pick if you're not going to take Hamilton. And just the thought of Ferrari winning at Monaco is just always cool. So I'm going to go with Sebastian Vettel winning the most important or the most prestigious Grand Prix of the year.
Yeah, in Monaco, I mean, you know, I can't speak to it a ton because, as I said, I don't follow Formula One a ton. But that's also like kind of on a bucket list just as a race fan. Just because you look at the course, and granted, I think the past two races, the leaders led every lap.
Unfortunately, that's the way it usually works there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, they have pit stops and there's a potential for overtaking at that point. But I mean, it's not only is it a street course, but it's a really tight street course.
For sure.
And so the chances for overtaking are incredibly limited. But it's just, I'm with you. It's a bucket list item, and it's a small bucket. I mean, I had a friend that I worked with in Charlotte about 6 or 7 years ago that actually went over for it and said it was just, the excess is crazy, that you've just got these enormous yachts and people just on them for days, eating caviar and drinking champagne and, you know, wearing just the most amazing outfits. And he's like, it's just, you're surrounded just by lavishness and excess. But he said it was unlike any racing event he'd ever been to. And it was far more of a social event than an actual race. It was all about who you saw and who saw you rather than the race itself.
I can't speak for you, but that doesn't sound like I'd fit in then. I'm just a t-shirt and jeans kind of guy.
Yeah, I don't picture me with my 12 pack of Natty Lights and, you know, wearing my Daisy Duke shorts, going out there with my Dale Earnhardt t-shirt on, fitting in real well, but But I still, at some point, we'll figure out a way.
For sure.
We'll go over there with the bass boat and park it right up on the front.
That's awesome. Right next to the big old yacht.
Exactly.
Now we'll talk about NASCAR because I want to end on the Indy 500 predictions. We got the Xfinity and Cup race this week, Neff. I haven't seen an entry list yet for the Xfinity race. I know Kyle Busch isn't racing. I'm going to go. It's so easy to go with Bell or Allgaier, who hasn't won yet this year. I'm going to go with Cole Custer. I've liked, and we've talked about this on the podcast, I like what I see out of that double zero this year.
I knew you were going to do that because I was thinking Custer.
And he's really good at Charlotte.
Yeah, he is good at Charlotte. Wow. I want to do something different. Let's just go crazy and go for Michael Annette winning a second race this year. That would really shock the world. But yeah, Annette has been better this year. And Junior Motorsports is decent at Charlotte. So let's say Annette shocks the world and comes up and wins his second race this season.
Yeah, I know before Dover, Annette had fallen to 11th in points, but that's not indicative of where they've run. They've been fast this year. Sneaky fast, too. Like, their qualifying's up. They won the pole at Talladega. Probably could have won Talladega had he not gotten a late race wreck. Just because that car, once it gets out front, we saw in Daytona, you couldn't pass it. Granted, in Daytona, they were single file and weren't trying to pass it. But, they've got a ton of speed this year. But now we're going to the Cup Series now. We got the Coke 600, one of the crown jewels, if you like that word. I don't think you do. Who you got?
I'm cool with crown jewels.
Someone that I talked to recently wasn't a fan of it. I thought it was you.
Yeah, no, I feel like there's four major events of the year, and the 600 is definitely one of them. Man, it's so tough to call, but I think I'm going to go with Truex. I think Truex does another one of his dominating performances. I thought, outside of Busch and Harvick, I thought Truex was the third fastest car on Saturday night. We've seen him lead a crap ton of laps in this race before on the way to winning it. It seems like this is a good race for him. I was going back through looking at open and all-star results to confirm that Larson was the second guy to ever win the open and win the all-star race. And Truex won multiple opens because before he was winning races, he was always good at Charlotte. So I'm going to go with Truex notching up another win at the 600.
I'm up in the air who I want to pick, but I kind of put this on Twitter a couple weeks ago. I'm going Alex Bowman. I'm riding that train. I feel like he's got a strike. Granted, you know, he didn't win a stage this week in the Open. He didn't even finish second in a stage. But I feel like they got a strike while the iron's hot, as I said last week on the podcast. Three straight second place finishes that shouldn't get overshadowed. He needs a win. That Hendrick needs a win outside of Chase. I got Alex Bowman. And if we've seen, like, if he runs like he did at Kansas, you know, granted the 600's 200 miles longer than Kansas, and they bring a car, if maybe that same car, he can win that race.
I agree. I think he's got as good a shot as anybody.
But now, Neff, in my opinion, bringing on the biggest race of the day, run right in the middle between Monaco and the 600. We got the Indy 500. Who you got? This is an interesting race, I feel like. I feel like it's kind of open more so than previous years.
Yeah, I mean, it's always open when you get down these. There's usually your front two rows are where your winner's most likely going to come from. But it can be anybody. And we've been talking through this whole podcast, and I've been kind of looking at the starting lineup, and I've changed my mind like six times. So I'm going to go with my heart rather than my head and say I'm going to pick Ed Carpenter to win from the middle of the front row. Ed's had a lot of chances in this thing, and something always seems to bite him. And it'd be really cool to see him finally pull this thing off.
That'd be a big win for Indianapolis, too. Hometown native, obviously. Neff, I'm going to go with, a few years ago, we talked about this off air. A few years ago, we did a mock podcast. It was our first one, and I picked Takuma Sato to win. and he won. I'm going with the middle of the second row, Colton Herta, to win the race. He's 19 years old, just turned 19. He was the youngest winner in IndyCar history earlier this year when he won at 18 years old on a street course. I mean, this guy has speed. He starts fifth, obviously. I got to be honest, don't know too much about him, but saw him being interviewed yesterday, and he's just, he got some kind of swagger to him, and he's got nothing to lose. I mean, it's I believe it's his first 500. At 19, it'd have to be, I'd imagine. So I'm going to go with the young guy. I'm going with Colton Herta.
That's cool. Brian Herta coached Alex Rossi to the win in the 100th running.
That is true. So save that fuel.
His kid should know what he's doing.
All right, Neff, any final thoughts before we sign off and get to my interview with Connor Daly?
I just enjoy racing, folks. It's summer is here. All the local short tracks are going. Amazing racing this past weekend, not only at Charlotte, but the Cars Tour race was fantastic at Motor Mile. I haven't watched it yet, but I heard the modified race at Wall Stadium was just ridiculous. Just get out, support local racing, support racing wherever you're at, because it's the best entertainment your money can buy.
I'd agree with that. I was trying to think of if I could disagree with that. I can't. I love racing. Always have, always will. It's always been my life. And I, you know, I think it's been yours too. Like you said, you went to a race and you weren't even born yet. So
exactly.
All right, now this should be a good interesting, or a good weekend of racing, I should say. But before we get to it, why don't we talk to Connor Daly?
Connor, you've had a solid month at Indy so far, leading the way on Fast Friday last week. Overall, how would you gauge the 25 cars so far in the month at Indy?
Honestly, man, we feel really good. The car has been strong all week. We hadn't really popped up on the timesheets that much, you know, just because we were working on what we needed to work on, eliminating what we didn't need on the car, and finding stuff that we wanted for our overall setup package. By the time Fast Friday hit, we were rolling, and obviously, you know, we were P1 that day, which was nice, and then we tried to find a little bit of speed on our own for qualifying, and we were able to. And honestly, I was thrilled with 11th. We knew we didn't have the fastest car, but to be essentially the, you know, third or fourth fastest Honda, I think it is. You know, that's not bad at all, and I'm really, really happy with it. So, you know, we're at the front of the grid. We're right there. We're certainly in the fight, you know, starting alongside Elio and Marco. I mean, that's a pretty solid row to be in, so, and I can't complain at all.
Now, you've qualified 11th on Saturday, which you mentioned, which I believe is your best start in the Indy 500. For you, how critical is it to get a good starting position?
I think it's massive more than ever this year because the cars are tough to pass. You know, the racing is not quite as awesome as it has been over the years, but you know, IndyCar is trying to work on improving that, and this year has been a step forward, I think, a little bit over last year, but it is still tough. So I think starting position and starts and restarts are going to be more important than they ever have been. So hopefully, you know, we can get a good start and then just kind of keep going forward from there.
Now, in qualifying or in the race, I don't feel like most sane people have ever, you know, driven into a corner at 230 miles per hour. So what's that feel like from the driver's seat?
Well, it's a rush, that's for sure. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I mean, you're right, not a lot of humans get to experience that. But it's, you know, it's incredible, especially when the car is, you know, the car gives you that feeling that it's, you know, it's strong and that it can make moves on people. And you know, you're essentially along for the ride when you have a great car, because it's, at Indy, the car is so important. And even if you're the best driver in the world, like obviously we saw with Fernando Alonso, you know, unless the car is up there with you, you know, it becomes very, very difficult.
I wanted to ask about that, about bump day in particular, because I know obviously you didn't have to worry about it this year, but last year you did, and in the past you have as well. So how nerve-wracking is bump day?
Well, yeah, last year was my, you know, my first experience really, you know, having to deal with that. It sucks. It's tough. You know, very, very exciting though for the fans. This year I was, you know, I was all about it. I thought it was incredibly emotional. It was a wild day, wild weekend in general. And just to see how it affects people, to see the celebration with the Youth Ghost team was really cool. I works hard at it, and he really wants to be a part of the Indy 500, and the fact that, you know, they didn't even make the race is definitely sad. But I think qualifying this year was for sure an exciting event, and I hope it brings back some of the, you know, excitement that fans used to always expect on qualifying weekend back in the day.
Now, Connor, I was looking at your results at Indy over the, I think you've had, what, 6 starts in the 500, and they're not the best. So how will you change that this year?
Well, there's a reason behind that. I caught on fire one year. I was on fire 3 times the first year, and then, you know, made a mistake one year and was in the wrong place at the wrong time the other year. So there's plenty of things that we can point to at Indy, sadly. But, you know, when I look back at my IndyCar career, I feel pretty, you know, pretty proud of what we've been able to do. And, you know, we finished second before. We've been on the podium. We've been at the lead of many, many races. So, you know, it's just a matter of putting everything together at Indy. I think the car and the team is the most important thing at Indy. The driver can only do so much, and thankfully I've got the best team to work with and one of the best cars, I think, out there right now. So, you know, I'm still learning about how to, you know, adjust my driving style towards the Andretti Autosport car. And we're getting there. We're getting better every day. So I certainly think that we have a really good chance this year, you know, at a very good finish, and obviously the plan is to execute on Sunday.
Now, that's a good transition, because Andretti Autosport, like you said, one of the best teams in IndyCars. What's it mean to you to get the support from them?
Well, it's been awesome. I mean, you know, essentially, the truth of it is, you know, I'm a customer for them right now, and we've got a great sponsor with the U.S. Air Force, and they're, you know, they're the ones that are making this possible. But, you know, by the end of the month, I want to be more than a customer. I want to be a driver that's wanted by this team for a long period of time, and that, you know, that would be awesome. I mean, to be a part of that team in the long run would be the goal, and you know, right now you have to kind of go from being a customer to a, you know, to a wanted entity for, you know, a long period of time. So we'll just have to kind of work on that all day Sunday, and then hopefully by the end of the weekend we can be proud of what we did.
Now, this podcast typically covers NASCAR, and obviously there's a lot of data sharing and, you know, support within the team. So how much can you lean on your teammates at Andretti Autosport?
You can definitely lean on your teammates. I mean, I got 2 Indy 500 winners as teammates. I got Marcos finishing on the podium at Indy like 4 times. Zach Veach is obviously still a young rookie. Well, not a rookie, but he's a young driver. So, you know, we're both learning still. And it's awesome to have Michael Andretti as well on my stand, because he's obviously got a lot of experience as well. So there's a lot of people to learn from, and I'm happy to be in an organization like that, because, you know, not a lot of people can say they've been a part of that type of a team before, so I'm pretty honored to be a part of it.
Now, this is your only scheduled race for 2019 as of now, right?
Yes.
How challenging is it that stepping, you know, there's been 4 races this year, how challenging is it stepping into the seat, kind of cold turkey? I know kind of the same deal last year where Indy was your first race as well.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you hate it because you want to be out there fighting with these guys every weekend. You know, I love the competition in IndyCar. I love the opportunity to race in IndyCar. But it is what it is, right? You got to work through the situation that you've got. This is the only shot we've got, and you know, we got to take advantage of it. So my goal is to, you know, go out and win the race on Sunday, and if we can't do that, just have the best day possible, and obviously take it from there. If we can organize more races, that would be the goal. I'm working still every day on trying to do more races. So even before the race starts, I'm still trying to bring partners together to secure more races later in the season. But, you know, until the check's cash, we don't really know what's going on.
So is it more frustration or motivation only running a limited schedule?
I'd say half and half.
Half and half? Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. It's just like NASCAR, it seems, in that stuff.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's tough to be a part-timer, but, you know, it could all be worth it, considering this is such a great opportunity with this team.
For sure. Now, Connor, I got a few more for you. A lot of people say that you're the most charismatic or one of the most charismatic drivers in IndyCar. What's that mean to you?
Well, I guess that means people like me. I don't know. I hope that's what it means. I mean, I like to interact with people. I like to talk to the fans. I like to be a part of, you know, everything that we can leading up to the race. I mean, there's a lot of exciting events, a lot of good fan interaction opportunities that we've got. So, I
something different to everyone, every driver, etc. What's the Indy 500 mean to you?
Well, it's my hometown. You know, I'm the only one in the field who's literally born in, you know, the north side of Indianapolis. So it's my home race, my hometown, a lot of family there, a lot of friends around. I've watched people's lives change entirely, you know, after they've won the race. And I've watched, you know, the emotional effect that it has on people if they lose and they come so close. So it's just wild to see that. And then I've been there every year since birth, except for one when I was racing in Monaco. So, you know, I've been around the track almost my entire life. So to be, you know, to have my face on that trophy, you know, would obviously mean the world to me.
Is there an added pressure being a hometown driver?
I don't think so. I think it's just more excitement for me. I like being a part of, you know, something that's literally happening just down the street from my house.
Got it. Now, as I mentioned, this is primarily a NASCAR podcast, but so I want to ask you one NASCAR question, Connor. Last year, you raced at Road America. Would you ever want to compete in NASCAR again?
I'd love to. Yeah, really, really enjoyed being a part of NASCAR. You know, the Xfinity Series has a lot of great drivers, and I love that race, although, you know, our car broke down, but to be a part of the Roush Fenway team was a lot of fun. I learned a lot from those guys, and I think there's some fun racing to be done there, and I would like to do more of it. However, you know, that's probably a long shot at the moment, but you never know.
Now, I'll get you out of here on this one, Connor, and you kind of hit on it a little bit earlier, but what would you consider a successful weekend at Indy this weekend?
I don't know. I think it's you got to aim for the, you know, aim for the fences. I mean, you got to try and win the race. There's no other reason we try to compete in the Indy 500 other than to win. So, you know, realistically though, a top three finish at Indy would be very, very important for my career. So that's the goal.
Well, cool, Connor. Thanks for taking time today in preparation for the Indy 500, and we wish you luck here at Front Stretch.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
All right, y'all. So there you have it. Really good conversation, as always, with Neff about everything NASCAR, the All-Star Race, and, of course, the Indy 500. It's cool having him as a co-host on this podcast, especially Indy 500 week, because he's a Hoosier native, like we talked about. And he grew up, as he mentioned, going to the track in the Indy 500 before he was even born. Also, good conversation with Connor Daly. A couple quick notes on that. That was my first IndyCar interview. I was directed in Connor Daly's attention. I was told he's very charismatic. Obviously, I knew that from watching IndyCar over the years. And I thought it lived up to it, for sure. And I know he had a sponsor appearance with the Air Force later that afternoon. Also, I taped that in a car on an old school, on a voice recorder, because I was coming back from Monday Night Raw Tuesday morning after the show. So that might be why the audio is a little off. But hey. It's still some good audio for you in previewing the Indy 500. But that'll wrap up this week's edition of the Front Stretch Podcast. Watch racing this weekend. Biggest race weekend of the year. Hands down, you got Monaco in the morning, Indy 500 in the afternoon, and then the Coke 600 to wrap it up. But until next week, we out.